If you want to truly unlock your business's potential, it starts with freedom. And we have the show for you. Check it out. Hello, everybody. This is Jake Stenzino, host of the Jake and Gino podcast, with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, the chef, the father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barber. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, I'm doing good today, and you're back in pink. Pretty in pink, my friend. Looking good.
It's called salmon, sir. Okay? It's called
salmon. You call it salmon. I call it pink. You still look good in it. Don't worry.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it, Gino. Hey, we have a very special guest today. Our guest today is the founder and CEO of World Blue, an award-winning author, speaker, and transformational coach who has helped hundreds of top companies become high-performing and highly profitable while creating a culture that people love. I think we're going to talk about freedom today, Gino. I don't know. We'll see where it goes. But without further ado, Tracy Fenton, welcome to the show.
Great to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it is always our pleasure. Let's get to know you a little better. Please share with us your background and how you got started in business.
Oh my goodness. Well, 25 years ago, I started my company, World Blue. We're called World Blue because blue is universally recognized as the color of freedom. Got the idea when I was in college. So we're talking about the original, you know, college dorm startup. And it really came out of, I was asked to be the director of our student affairs conference while I was in college during my senior year. And I said to the student team, let's do the conference on something that's really outside the box and forward thinking and really going to take people to the next level. You know, when you're in college and you think you're so smart and got to do something really smart.
Always really smart in college. Way
so
smarter than everybody else.
It's so smarter than everybody else. Yeah. That's right. And so the team came back to me, the team being, of course, my friends who are all in college together.
Your drinking buddies.
Exactly. And they said, Tracy, let's do the topic on freedom and democracy. And I was like, what? You know, my thinking at that time was democracy was voting. It was about politics. It was about old dudes in Washington, D.C. So, you know, that was my impression. And skipping over a lot of detail, what I started to realize was I had always had a passion in my life for helping people realize their fullest potential, even from a really young age. And I started to see that if we're going to live lives of freedom where we can realize our fullest potential, you have to have a framework to do that. And that framework is the principles of democracy. So we did the conference on democracy. I spent my senior year of college researching what are the principles of democracy? Because everyone thinks when they hear the word democracy, and I'm not talking about Democrat or Republican here, I'm talking about a style of leadership. Most people think democracy means voting, and it doesn't. Voting is a mechanism for making a decision, but it's not democracy. So ended up researching the 10, found there's 10 principles that create a democratic environment framework for freedom. And had that theory and started World Blue, graduated from college, had no money, you know, moved back to Iowa where I'm from and thought, how am I going to start this business? So on the side, I went to work for a division of a Fortune 500.
Hold on. You're going to elaborate on democracy here, right?
Because We'll go into it more. Yeah, sure. Definitely. I want to, but just give me the broad brushstrokes. So I graduate, have no money, starting World Blue, thinking, okay, how can I bring freedom and democracy into business? Got to support myself. And I went to work for a division of a Fortune 500 company in my home state of Iowa. And I walked in that first day into the workplace, like many of us do to a new job. We're excited. We're ready to go. We're ready to contribute. We're ready to be a part of a team. I had held all these leadership positions growing up. And I left that first day on my corporate, big fancy corporate job, completely deflated. I thought, oh my gosh, they don't care about my voice. They don't care about what I think. They don't see me as a human being. I'm a cog in the machine. And I just remember thinking, if this is the next like 40 or 50 years of my life, I don't think so. I don't, yeah, shoot me now, right? Exactly, just shoot me now. 4 months later, I resigned and went to focus.
Didn't take you too long.
I didn't take me long to make that decision. And my boss said to me, he goes, Tracy, and I thought this was so telling. He goes, Tracy, I knew you had too much respect, self-respect to be treated the way we treat people around here. And that experience just galvanized.
So what'd that say about your boss?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly.
Your boss was not loving him or herself.
There. No, it's self-worth. It all comes back to self-worth. And I talk about this in the book. And so, you know, in the last 25 years, built my company. I have a team all over the world. We've worked in 100 countries. I've traveled to 42 countries. We've worked with top brands around the world, from Zappos to WD-40, DaVita, Great Harvest Bread, Mind Valley. I mean, we've worked with small to very large companies, helping them build cultures and lead with the principles of freedom and democracy. And our approach averages a 700% greater revenue growth compared to the S&P 500 over a three-year period. So this isn't just a nice idea from a blonde chick, you know, this actually produces massive results that help companies thrive during good times and also challenging times like what we're in right now.
Well, Tracy. Gino, don't let her off the hook yet. She has to dive into democracy voting. No, I asked 2 minutes ago.
I've got something in the book for you, because she's not just a nice chick with a great idea, blonde chick. My wife's a nice blonde chick. Those blondes, you got to be careful for those blondes, because they're really powerful and they're really sneaky. But the word, Jake, democracy.
Super screamers, cowboy.
The word democracy, Jake, in the book, demos is people and Creighton is rule. And I love how Tracy goes into the book about that as well, and talk about organizational democracy in the book. That's really powerful as well.
And you mentioned voting, because love America, and everyone's like, oh, democracy, democracy. Little fearful of straight up democracy because of the mob rule, and you need to have strong laws in place. Constitutional Republic, you maybe talk about that a little bit, but straight up, you know, democracy scares me a little bit, but please elaborate.
Right, right. It scares you. I mean, into organizational democracy. Yeah. Democracy scares us if we think democracy is voting.
Yeah.
A straight vote is not democracy. Yeah. That is where you would get that mob rule. Okay, so there's three ways to make decisions democratically. Voting, consent, and consent-based decision-making. Okay? So they voted under, quote, air quotes, for those of you who can't see me, they voted under Saddam Hussein's Iraq. Does that make it a democracy? Heck no. Because guess what? There was only one choice. Okay. So what is democracy? Organizational democracy is specifically what we focus on at World Blue, because we're bringing it the framework for freedom to companies. So in the book, I talk about, and this I've researched the classics and understanding what democracy is. There's 10 principles that create a democratic system. So we need to understand that democracy is a style of leadership. It's a style of governance. And yes, a democratic style of leadership can be applied to government. Like, we are a republic here, a constitutional republic, but with a democratic style of leadership, right? So what are those principles of democracy? They're principles like transparency, accountability, decentralized power. That's where demos and kraton, the word democracy means power to the people. It doesn't mean vote. It means power to the people. So it's principles like that, choice, being able to have dialogue and listening, you know, where it's not just one way. It's about integrity. You cannot have a freedom-centered democratic system without integrity. We're seeing the breakdown of that, just that lack of integrity every day, eroding freedom around the world. So in the book, I talk about these 10 principles and show how they are operationalized within companies, because what we're here to do at World Blue is to actually bring more freedom and democracy in the world through business. You guys talk about impact all the time on your show. We want to impact a billion people. We want to see a billion people living, leading, and working in freedom. And we have the framework for how to get there.
Before we go into the democracy and into those principles, can you just define for us the difference between the fear at work versus freedom at work?
Yeah, absolutely. So the method that I created and that I talk about and that we've been teaching all over the world is called Freedom at Work. And it's really in contrast to fear at work. So most of the time in the workplace, we're working, leading ourselves, leading others, and ourselves acting from a place of fear. And the problem with fear is that all the research tells us that when we're in a state of fear, the peripheries of our brain shut down and we become myopic. We literally get tunnel vision. We become dumber when we're in a state of fear. Okay. We've all been there, right? We've all had those moments where we're like, why did I make that decision? Oh yeah, because I was freaking out, you know? So we don't make as good of decisions when we're in that state of fear. We can't play the long game. We can't see the big picture. That's a problem, especially when you're running a business, whether it's a business of two people or 2,000 people. We all have to be able to make better decisions. And the average person thinks 60,000 thoughts a day. 80% of our thoughts, you guys also talk about mindset, 80% of our thoughts are the exact same thoughts that we had the day before. And 95% of those thoughts are negative and fear-based. So we have to find ways to get out of a mindset of fear, to lead ourselves and others out of fear, and then to make sure we design our workplace cultures, not in fear, but in freedom. Hierarchical structures, bureaucratic structures, these are all fear-based structures. So the opposite of that fear at work that's going on in most companies around the world, whether they're small or large, the opposite is freedom at work. That's what we teach. And so we teach three things, those three pillars. How do you have a freedom-centered mindset rather than a fear-based mindset? How do you have freedom-centered leadership rather than fear and control and dictatorship-based leadership? And then how do you design, that's the third pillar, design, freedom-centered design. How do you design your team and your organization with the systems and processes that are democratic rather than hierarchical and control-based? Excuse me. And our end goal, of course, is to release the potential of the people, release the potential of the company so that you can accelerate growth, which is how we get this, these huge breakthrough numbers that we do for companies, by releasing potential. I mean, that's what freedom is all about. It's about helping us realize our fullest potential. Freedom takes accountability. I'm not talking about anarchy. I'm not talking about a free-for-all, but I'm talking about the kind of freedom that brings out the best in people and allows them to really achieve their goals.
Before I ask my next question, Jake, there's 60,000 thoughts in a day. Do you have like 58,000 of them in the shower when you're taking a nice hot shower?
Only when I'm thinking of you, Gino.
Okay. 58,000. That's pretty good. I'm top of mind. Every day you're thinking about me. That's what I like to hear, my friend. Now the power question, Jake, do you know what the power question is?
I think it has to do with choice.
What would you do if you weren't afraid, Jake? If you weren't afraid of something, what would you do? And let's
jump.
Basically expand upon that.
Are you asking me questions or not, Gina? Like, I don't know what's going on here. You're either asking me or not. You're pulling the rug out from under me. I guess it's to you, Tracy.
Yeah, well, I love, so thanks for bringing that up. So that first pillar of freedom at work is having a freedom-centered mindset. So how do we have a freedom-centered mindset so that 95 or whatever percent of our thoughts aren't fear and control-based? And the quick story to this is when I was in my 20s and it started World Blue, I moved to Washington, D.C. I was a full-time graduate student, and I was also working on the side for the NASDAQ stock market, traveling a lot in my 20s, just building my company, very, very busy. And at one point, I was so stressed out and so overwhelmed, and I just thought, oh my gosh, what can I do? I'm a really spiritual person, and I called a mentor of mine who's very spiritually minded and sort of, you know, barfed out all my woes to her, and she patiently listened on the phone, and then she said, Tracy, I have just one question for you. I'm like, what? And she's like, what would you do if you weren't afraid? How would you solve these problems? What actions would you take if you weren't afraid? And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, felt the whole weight lift off of me. And I quickly could see, yeah, I am being controlled by fear. I'm acting from a place of fear. And we all know that, oh my gosh, right? We all have those moments of fear where you just feel like you're in the fog. You feel the heaviness. No amount of caffeine is going to get you through that. So how do we lift that off? And what I've taught to thousands of leaders around the world, and I teach it in the book, is really five questions to help us break out of fear and get to freedom. And if it's okay, Gino, I'd love to go through those five questions.
Absolutely. I was actually going to list them out, but go through them. And I think everyone right now, if you're at a place where you can take some notes, these five questions are important because they're, you know, when you ask the right question, you get the right answer. And when you ask better questions, you get better answers. So it's important that you follow up with that. What would you do if you weren't afraid with these five questions to yourself? So shoot.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So the five questions, and I call this the power question practice. Why do I call it power question? Because when we're in fear, we are not in our power. We're totally off center. But when we're in freedom, then we reclaim our sense of power. And these five questions you can use on yourself. You can use them when your business partner or your spouse or your kids come to you and they're afraid. I've used this with so many people in my life. It's breakthrough after breakthrough. So I want you to think of a challenge that you're dealing with. It could be related to your work. It could be real estate. It could be at home, personal, professional. Just try to think of a challenge you're dealing with, okay, in your mind. So here are the five questions of the power question practice. The first question is, what are you afraid of? Like, really, what are you afraid of? And sometimes people go, well, I'm afraid, you know, if this doesn't work out, I won't have enough money, or if this doesn't, you know, but you got to go deeper to this. Like, what is it that you're actually afraid of? Often what it comes back to is we're afraid of death in some form, death of finances, death of reputation, death of trust, or we're afraid of failure, or we're afraid of what others might think of us. So it's getting really clear as you think about that challenge, like, what exactly is at the core of it that you're afraid of? The second question is, why are you afraid? You know, what is it that's driving that fear? Is it because of something that's happened in the past? Is it because you're projecting something into the future that might happen? Why are you afraid? Now we get to the power question itself, which is, what would you do if you weren't afraid? How would you solve that problem? What actions would you take? What conversations would you have? What opportunities would you go for if you weren't afraid? Now, I'm not talking about reckless fearlessness here. I'm talking about responsible fearlessness. What would you do if you weren't afraid? The fourth question is, how would you feel without that fear? How would you feel? I mean, people are, oh, right? I'd feel lighter. I'd feel energized. I'd feel more joyous. People are saying to me, why are you so happy? I'm like, because I'm not governed by fear, you know? So how would you feel without that fear? And the last question is really important, which is this: why is it okay to let the fear go? Why is it okay to let that fear go? Again, for me, I'm a really spiritual person. I believe the universe is good. I believe God has my back. But for some people, it's like, yeah, I can let it go because, you know, I've worked it out before, or I'm not going to end up under a bridge. Someone will help me out, or whatever. You got to understand, you know, people always say, well, let it go. Well, I think it's kind of hard to let it go if you don't know what you're letting it go to, you know? So why can you let it go? So those are the five questions. What are you afraid of? Why are you afraid? What would you do if you weren't afraid? How would you feel without the fear? And why is it okay to let that fear go? And what we do in the many leadership courses and culture courses we teach is we integrate that practice, and we invite people to do what we call a power question challenge, which is to take those five questions and every single day for 21 days, because it takes 21 days to change a habit, go through those questions, pick a new challenge every day, ask yourself those five questions, and you're going to start to develop a whole new level of awareness, of compassion, and of action and motivation, unlike anything you've tapped into before.
Do you mind if I, both of you, if I share the story of myself going to a spiritual mentor and sort of a different outcome that you had?
Sure, I'd love to hear it.
I don't think I ever told this to Jake. It was around September of 2014-ish, and I remember having a tough time at the business. We're getting audited. Things don't look really good, and I go to my priest for confession. So I think I'm going to go there and I'm going to be really throw my sympathy and get some sympathy from him and tell him everything's going to be okay. So Father Quinn, who I saw last week in New York City, actually, old Irish guy, sit down in his office and I start complaining to him. And I actually start crying in the room. I'll never forget it. And I said, Father Quinn, I don't know what I'm going to do. I mean, what can I do here? And I know God had to speak through him. He looks at me with his Irish accent. He says, what the hell are you complaining about? Everyone's got problems. I mean, I've got a parish here with 5,000 families. I'm trying to solve the debt crisis here. I'm trying to, you know, get this thing, the ship righted. You've got a great family. You've got a business. I mean, that you've got nothing. I got my, and I'm like, I thought I came here to complain to you, bro. And you're complaining to me. But now that I look back and I reflect,
did he give you a smack too?
He almost.
I wish he would have. It would have been good if he gave you a little one. Not like anything too serious, but a little bit of a nice little pat would have been nice.
But sometimes we need that toughness, yeah. And we're inward. And I was fear based. I was coming from fear, and I think he was just trying to change my state. And I think, I mean, we're always looking. And at that,
he said,
point,
"Man up, Gino." That's come on. What he said. You're supposed to be the leader of your family here. Let's go.
Yeah, but bro, I mean, I'm like coming there, I'm crying on you. Help me out here. It's not going to be okay. It's going to be tough, but that's okay. But the moral for me to the story is, out of every problem, there's opportunities. And I think God was trying to show me that there's an opportunity here. And that's what led me to Jake. And that's what really led me to go into multifamily full time. And that's what led me to become financially free and to look at other business models and actually ultimately leave New York. So if I'd never gone into that room and never gotten that kick in the butt, I may have been stuck in that fear-based. And like Tracy's been saying, you know, is it ironic that we've been shut down for the last 2 years? And then all of a sudden everyone's in fear. Everyone doesn't know what to do. They're all shut down. Those of us who have stepped out of that fear and tried to get surrounded with others, I think they have excelled. So big shout out to Father Quinn. Thank you.
Problem Q Daddy, bringing it. I love that. Hey,
I love that. Yeah. I love that story. I'm so glad you shared that. Thank you. Because, you know, what he did was give you such a tremendous gift and you took it and look at the ripple effect and all the people you've been able to help. And also what I hear and what you're saying, Gino, too, is gratitude. Like so when we're in fear, I know times when I've been in fear, sometimes I'm just like, you know, I'm really grateful the sky is so blue today. You know, I'm really grateful that sun is shining. We all have challenges. We all have problems. But when you, it's none of this is rocket science, right? When you can focus on that gratitude and really make sure you're acting from a place of gratitude and freedom and moving towards those higher goals, that gets you through the fear. But we, this whole world has been completely mesmerized by fear for the last 2 to 3 years. And it's continuing. And so I feel like this message of freedom rather than fear is just absolutely so urgent right now.
Tracy, before we go to the short answer questions, let's go over a couple of those democratic principles, because a couple of them that resonate with me, you said the couple, which is the total antithesis of what the government's actually doing. You're talking about integrity, accountability, transparency, decentralization. I mean, these are the things that Jake and I are trying to do to create an enduring organization. And I love that Jake's laughing because I knew it. My goal on the show is to actually create great content, but make Jake laugh. If I make Jake laugh, I've had a great day. So, I mean, those are pretty challenging. I mean, to be transparent, especially for a leader nowadays, especially, I don't want to be sexist, but for a male leader, is to show that we have weakness and that we make mistakes. And it's very difficult for a lot of us to do that, to be transparent and to be open and to have that accountability to say, when I messed up, it's all about me. So which ones would you like to share? Which ones do you think are really important?
Let's talk about transparency, because I want to touch on exactly what you just said about being a leader. Sometimes being a man, it's hard to be transparent, but I'll tell you, I work with men and women and it's hard both sides. But let me tell you a story about the impact that transparency can have on our businesses and on our organizations when we work this way. So we were working with a company. They're a global company, the 120,000 employees, CEO is a man, and they were really committed to this idea of running their company on the principles of freedom and organizational democracy. And we had been working with them. Now, during the last Great Recession in 2008, they were hitting a major financial problems, as we're seeing many companies hit right now. And this CEO decided, I can either like go into the cave, which is what most of us do, and try to like figure out this problem myself of the financials, or I can open up and be transparent about it. And the problem was they had to find a way to save $100 million, or they were going to have to let people go. And of course, that's what we're seeing right now. We're not seeing creative thinking. We're just seeing that slash and burn mentality.
Everybody, that's what we were talking about before the show. Office jobs, 10%, like all the large companies, just whack them every week.
Right, just whacking everybody. Yeah. There's no creative thinking. It's all like consultants just coming in and saying, who cares about performance? Who cares, whatever? Just whack them out, you know?
Yeah.
So what this CEO said is, I want to do something different. We got to save $100 million. Am I just going to try to solve this problem with myself and my executive team and a group of outside consultants? Or am I going to give power to my people, because we function democratically, and hear their voice and hear if they have any ideas? Thankfully, he chose to do the latter. He went on his internal blog to the company, this is 120,000 people, and said, here's our problem. We got to save $100 million, or we're going to have to let people go. Do you guys have any ideas? Do you have any ideas? Use your voice, power to the people. Let me know what you think. So he was transparent. He was open. He was humble. He wasn't afraid. Put that out there. They had hundreds of ideas come back to them. They ended up acting on 76 of the ideas. They curated through them, acted on 76. And instead of saving $100 million, they saved $260 million, and no one was let go. And here's the other thing. During this recessionary time, they were able to keep morale high. They were able to keep people engaged, right?
So they didn't turn on each other like wolves, like Sally smoking too long over there.
Exactly. That's right.
I'm taking a lunch break for 2 hours. Like none of that.
Right. And their competitors did. Their competitors turned on their people. And so when you do that,
adversarial versus collaborative. Yeah,
exactly. That's exactly it, Jake. So when you do that, then people become, you know, it's all this. People remember how they were treated, right? They're not going to come back when things pick back up again. And they're going to talk about how they were treated at the company. But our client kept that morale high, kept people engaged, treated people as human beings rather than cogs in the machine, and actually came out. And I talk about this in the book, all the percentages and whatnot, came out doing so much better.
Jake, before you go to the short answers, real quick about the story also, think about the power of how much he saved to have to rehire people when they come back out. Think about like the tailwind that he has, the momentum that he has coming out of that recession. It's mind-boggling that people don't make those studies where you're going to lay off $100 million, but then you have to rehire them when things do pick up because there is a market cycle. So and instead
then,
of saying,
But then they hate you at that point.
Yeah, and that's the thing. We'll all cut 10% of our salaries. Everyone takes a 10% haircut for the next year or 2 years. You could probably save it just from that one idea and say, we're all going to do it. And I'm the CEO, and I'll take a 30% pay cut for the next 2 or 3 years until we get out of this. And then when things get out, all of a sudden, you've got your whole staff there, and you're ready to rock and roll. So I just think...
But think about most corporations right now, and to her point, it's a top-down type of approach. Like, I'm going to dictate to you, the next person is going to dictate to you, and so on and so forth. So they're not even hearing the ideas and the innovation that's probably embedded within the organization because they're too smart and they don't need to hear it because they know what to do.
Yeah.
This is what 99% of companies are doing. And that's one of the major issues. So they actually said, hey, let's take a step back and listen. And, you know, Ira figured it out and said, hey, we could cut this. Why are we spending so much on these lunches? We don't need this much paper in the warehouse. Like whatever the case may be, there's probably a million ideas in everyone's organization right now. They could save a lot of money instead of just axe and heads. So.
But that's work. That takes work, both of you guys. That's a lot of work. It's a lot harder, a lot easier to
And you got to humble yourself and you got to be open to hearing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 It's maybe in the short term, it's a little bit more work to, I don't know, put it out on a blog and ask people ideas and then curate through them. I mean, yeah, it's a little bit of time, but to both your points, you got to play the long
game. What's better though, you know? Cutting off 100,000 heads or, you know, seriously, that's a no brainer.
Yeah. Just energetically, it feels a lot better. Yeah.
Cool.
Hard to let people go. Love it. Love it. Okay. What's next?
We are going to take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor. A question, Gino, and I get a lot is, what's a great value add?
You've just closed a deal and you're looking for a way to maximize the attractiveness of your complex to potential renters.
At Rand Property Management, we start at the bottom, literally. We start with the flooring.
And that means we start with a call to Christian Chapman and his team at David's Abbey Carpet and Flooring. No one wants to deal with the expense and hassle of putting in new floors, and that is exactly why we turn to David's Abbey.
David's Abbey Carpet and Flooring provides a quality, long-lasting product at a great price. The wear layer and waterproofing that comes standard with all David Abbey products will ensure you are on solid ground for years to come.
My favorite part of working with Christian and his team is convenience. David's Abbey will direct ship their product anywhere in the U.S., That's white glove service, folks.
And your installation team will love how easy it is to install. The next time that you're looking for a great value add, give our friends at David's Abbey Carpet and Flooring a call and speak with Christian.
Or click the link in the show notes to visit their website today.
All right, we are back. So I'm a very literal guy and we've been speaking at a very high level, but I'm confused. So I need to get to the root of what we're discussing. Who is afraid? Who are we talking about? Is it the people running the companies? Is it the team members? Talk to me about and where the fear is coming from. I really need a literal example here so I can get my head wrapped around what we're talking about today.
Yeah, the fear is everywhere. You know, yeah. The fear is at the top, the CEOs, right? I'm working with CEOs every day who are, I've never seen so much fear in the eyes of CEOs right now because of what's happening, whether it's supply chain issues or war or, it's everything, right? And so we're talking bottom line. We're talking about how to stay, you know, profitable, how to keep shareholders happy. So you've got all that fear at the top, which is creating these short-term, short-sighted decisions. And then you have employees who are in fear. We're moving from the Great Resignation to another Great Recession, right? So employees are wondering, am I going to keep my job? Am I going to have employment? How's this going to impact my family? You know, so we're seeing fear at every single level of an organization.
So is it freedom from fear for everybody, or is it like freedom of your thoughts to make better decisions? Like I'm really trying to get my head wrapped around it.
Yes. So it's freedom. It's freedom at work. In literally, how do we structure it into our companies? So we structure freedom rather than fear. But freedom at work is
culturally throughout the whole organization.
Culturally throughout the whole organization. And of course, that starts with you as an individual. Because when I first started this work, Jake, I thought, okay, we're going to help create these healthy cultures. Let's go in and redo their systems and processes from these command and control, you know, top-down pyramid structure to much more decentralized, model. But what I had to learn in the work is that it comes back to mindset, because if you have a leader who, a CEO, for example, who's totally in fear, reactionary fear, they're not going to be able to go with you into redesigning the culture. So that's why we have to start with mindset. Then we teach those leadership skills. Then we go into culture. 75% of what creates a healthy culture in a company is actually the systems and processes. What do I mean by that? It's just how you get stuff done. You know, how to get stuff done. And in the book, I give 100 examples of how to give power to your people to actually get things done, whether it's a town hall meeting or the democratically deciding bonuses or any number of things that take power out of this limited and bureaucratic model and gives power to the people in order for them to be able to make decisions faster, to make decisions better, to be more collaborative, and to feel that sense of ownership and loyalty that keeps them there and keeps them highly engaged and performing at that higher level. Because you also want to, you don't just want to keep people there, you want to keep them engaged.
Jake, I can give a quick example of that. Big shout out to John Griffin, our ops manager, Johnny G. And last week he set a goal setting meeting for the entire organization. And I'm like, oh, another meeting. I don't know if I really want to do it. It's a waste of time, another hour. And what I found was it was actually invigorating, because we went over the Rockefeller habits. We went over what, which one we need to perform on for this quarter. And we have our weekly huddles with the executive team and we do our quarterly meetings. And a lot of the team members aren't on that meeting. And when we did the meeting, all of a sudden the sales team is like, oh, I get what marketing's trying to do. And marketing's like, oh, I get what sales is trying to do. And people were trying to do provide fulfillment. It's like, oh, I get it. And it actually opened it up and it empowered him to bring some ideas. And all of a sudden the ideas started flowing and it was a great meeting. So I think something like that, where I don't want to be at the top all the time dictating, I'd like to have my team members actually do that and create those meetings and create those spaces where we can come up with ideas. I think that's what Trace is actually talking about in the book.
Yeah. I mean, you talked about daily huddles. So we do something at Aura Blue. It's our all access culture pass. So we actually give companies access to all of these best practices and help them integrate them into their companies. Once you set up these democratic systems and processes, they're in place and they run. We had one of our clients, it's a host web hosting company, very successful multi-million dollar web hosting company in California. We helped them set up their democratic systems and processes. They decided to have a spinoff company. What they did was they took those systems and processes that were working. What do I mean? Daily huddles, things like that. That's what I mean by system and process. They took those best practices, they put them into their spinoff company, and they were able to grow from zero to $175 million sale in just 2 years. So when you have these systems and processes in place that aren't slowing people down, that aren't bureaucratic, that aren't, you know, fiefdoms and fighting, but are about power to the people to make decisions, you get that growth so much faster. You get that hockey stick acceleration. And it just is phenomenal. I just don't know why every company doesn't do this.
So yeah. we're big fans of the book Small Giants. Have you read that one?
Yeah, sure.
So real big fans of that. We picked up before we read it, we actually started doing this, but we like the idea of the employee stock ownership program or the ESOPs. Yeah. What we have on our real estate side of the company is we have a management group that manages all the properties that we own. And then we own the actual, each new property we buy is its own, you know, investment, right? So we don't raise outside capital, but we actually have team members after they've been with us for 2 years, they're allowed to invest in the deals. So this last one, this one that we're doing right now, we actually have, you know, 17, you know, team members on the deal. And we're seeing a huge demand now from internal team members to get in and start actually owning, you know, components of the company. What are your thoughts on that? And have you seen that other places and how has it worked?
Oh yeah, 100%. So being an ESOP is a fabulous example of the democratic principle of decentralization being in practice. So, and I talk about it in the book. So that's great. That's fabulous because you're giving power to the people, you're giving ownership. People care, you know, when they have that sense of ownership, you perform at a different level. And so, yeah, that's a great example of a system and process that's very democratic.
And it's also a little self-serving because sometimes the property managers, when they
want to just keep it easy for myself, that's why I'm doing it.
Yeah. Well, when the property managers didn't have ownership, It was a challenge saying, hey, we need to raise rents. Now they have ownership and they understand how to drive the business. They're like, well, now we've got to raise rents and those market rents, we've got to stay to market rents. And it's one of those things that even the maintenance techs, well, I've got to go out and do the maintenance calls because we want to keep happy residents. We don't want to have employee turnover.
We want to fix it right on the front end now, not yes.
Right. Yeah, so that's exactly it. It's win-win. It's smart. I mean, you're also getting to what's another system and process of transparency, open book management, right? So it's having, I'm sure your owners, they have to understand what are the finances? You know, what's the financial picture? Oh, we have to raise rents. This
anyone can pull an income statement at any given and see what's going on.
So you guys are practicing open book management, another great practice of transparency that I talk about in the book. So these are those systems and processes that you get in place. And as you have them in place, again, you guys see the impact and the benefit that comes from it.
The interesting thing is that you know, we have a deal going right now that we're renovating and turning it. And it's a little bit on the smaller side for us. And so I'm eager to get it to where it needs to be. And I'm really excited about the future potential of it. But there's employees and team members that have invested on it. And they've been pushing harder to get it to where it needs to be than myself, because percentage wise, that impacts their net worth and their income much greater than mine. So they're more motivated now to get that to that where it needs to be than myself, even though I own a large percentage of it. So it's a pretty interesting dynamic and it's working quite well for ourselves.
Right. You see the motivation when people are engaged, when they have ownership, when they have access to information, the motivation level goes through the roof. And that's why all these things that are out there of like perks and incentives and free lunches and, you know, can you bring your dog to work and all this stuff is just complete BS, in my opinion. The way you motivate people is giving people that sense of ownership. It's aligning their individual sense of purpose with the purpose of what you're trying to achieve. And when people have that stake in the outcome, they're so much more motivated. They don't need, you know, to have, you know, carrot and stick sort of
data. Well, it's to your point. Yeah, it's less command and control. It's more incentive based and truly beneficial to them to make sure the property is performing at that point.
Right, exactly. And you're tapping into that intrinsic motivation, which is what keeps people going over the long term.
Any tips for people scaling their organization or best practices for scale?
Well, you got to understand to scaling starts with understanding the principles that allow you to scale. And so that's what the 10 principles of organizational democracy are scalable. And what do I mean by that? So if we're working in a company with five people and we're talking about how do you implement transparency with five people, that's going to look different than implementing transparency with 5,000 people in a company, right? With five people, maybe you can all get on Zoom together and talk, but with 5,000 people, maybe you need to have a town hall meeting. You know, maybe it needs to be more formal. Maybe it needs to be that. So if you're going to scale, now I'm talking scaling culture, but if you're going to scale, you got to understand the principles that are in back of it. And then how you scale those systems and processes, what systems and processes are appropriate for that size of the organization, what your goals are, what your geography is, what your industry is. And that's what we help companies do.
Yeah, big part of it. You mentioned habits before. Any habit that has really impacted your life in a positive way that you want to share with the folks?
Yeah, we're all about habits. We actually use the word commitments. And so making commitments to do certain things every day for a certain amount of time. I talked about with the power question, making the commitment to do that every day for 21 days. In my life, I have my own commitments that I do every day. And you can turn it into a game. Like we do something with our clients where we say, if you miss a day, you got to start over of those 21 days, because there's something very magical that happens. It's like you don't go to the gym and lift the weight once and be like, I'm now in shape, right? You got to kind of do the reps. And that's how you're going to see the payoff. So I think habits and commitments that are about mindset, make sure a lot of people talk about mindset, but it's about really addressing the root of almost every problem in life is fear. And the reason we're not solving our problems is because we're not going deep enough into actually addressing the fear that's driving the problem. And that's why we're just playing whack-a-mole all the time with our problems. So I think any kind of a practice that is helping you address fear, whether it's a power question, prayer, meditation, whatever it may be, those are really good habits to have.
Do you know it's that time of the show again where I quote Stephen Pressfield, put your ass where your heart wants to be.
Jake, before we do that, where can we get the book? I want Tracy to share where her website, where we can get the book as well.
My brand new book, Freedom at Work. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, tons of independent booksellers. It's everywhere. And my company is called World Blue. That's World Blue, BLU, no E on blue. You can go to worldblue.com and we are there. We're also on LinkedIn, do a lot of stuff on LinkedIn. So would love to hear from any of your listeners.
Jake, we have another unemployable guest on the Jake and
You think so?
It's a recurring theme.
He was employed for 4 months, I think.
4 months is probably a lot longer than a lot of other guests. But you know what? Being in college, starting this whole mission 25 years ago, and you know, going through the ranks and working with all these companies, whether you're a small company or a large company, and coming up with those 10 democratic principles. And Jake, I'm going to leave it off with you, the power question. What would you do, Jake, if you weren't afraid?
What would I do if I wasn't afraid? Is this your recap asking me what would I do if I wasn't afraid?
That's part of my recap. Yes.
You know, Gino, I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to do this. And I was going to tell you before the show, but I don't even know if I got a chance to. Maybe I did. I would commit to myself in the next 2 years that I'm going to find a big piece of land that has a water storage on it. So natural spring, and I'm going to buy it. And I'm going to have my own water brand, and I'm going to have a store of water because I've been talking about it for years, and I'm just going to commit to doing it. Okay. So we bought a lot of land recently. I'm going big and I'm going all in. So be on the lookout for my water brand in the next couple of years.
Tracy, thanks.
Fire Gino, I'm going to bring it.
Thank you for being on the show, Tracy. The book is great. I mean, everyone go out and read it. And I think, honestly, if you can just stop and say to yourself, what am I afraid of? And how is that fear serving me? And continue to ask those five questions of the power question practice. If you can start asking those five questions and be honest with yourself, you're going to get some amazing answers. You're going to get clarity because we don't lack motivation in life. We lack the clarity. And I think that exercise.
You just gave it to me, Gino. And Tracy's going to get my first case and it's going to be glass bottles. First class all the way.
Love it. Can't wait.
All right, Tracy, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me. It was a joy.
Thanks, Tracy.